The Phillies come back to beat Atlanta last night, while the Kansas City Royals potentially suffer some pretty impactful injuries. Let's break down that and all of last night's action on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Friday, August 30th, a special solo edition of First Pitch. I'm Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. And big night of games last night. Obviously, we've talked about this a ton on this show, given my Atlanta Braves background. But Philadelphia Phillies, Atlanta Braves have the first game in their four-game series. Atlanta looks to be rolling to a win. They're up 4-0. Matt Olson has hit two home runs. And then Brandon Marsh hits a three-run home run off of Charlie Morton in the sixth inning. Nick Castellanos follows up with a two-run homer the next inning. And all of a sudden, Philly gets a 5-4 win in game one. I think there's a couple things to kind of point out from this game. The first one is that unlike the last time these teams met last week, because again, you play the same team in back-to-back weeks, it's a dumb setup by Major League Baseball. Philly was able to get guys on base. Against Charlie Morton, they had a runner on, the leadoff runner on, in five of their six innings against Morton. Now, they didn't bring that guy in until the sixth, but they had opportunities. And I think that's big. But then also, this really, Philly came back and won this game. But you almost have to give equal credit or blame, I guess, to the Atlanta Braves for losing this game. So I wrote a piece over at Braves Today that dropped, I actually believe, Thursday morning, about how Aaron Bummer, the lefty reliever that Atlanta got via trade from the Chicago White Sox, was quietly pitching like one of the best relievers in baseball. His results did not look like that. His ERA was higher than you would expect, and I went into the whole thing in the piece. But ground ball rate, 97th percentile, over 60% ground ball rate. Barrels. He had allowed one barrel in over 200 plate appearances this season. It was in Colorado, and it wasn't even a homer. And Aaron Bummer is up in the bullpen with Charlie Morton over 100 pitches already. And in, I think it's 70-something plate appearances, Brandon Marsh was batting 200 against lefties. Two men on, one out, a guy who doesn't hit lefties well, and you a lefty ground ball specialist in the pen, you make the move. Ryan Sitker did not. He chose to leave Morton in to face Brandon Marsh. And when asked about it after the game, here's what he said about that decision.
He was going to go through to Schwarber. You know, if I know he's going to hit a homer, I'd probably take him out. I don't have that luxury. And he's a good matchup for me right there. I like Charlie's breaking ball on him, and then, you know, he popped him up and then wind blew it out.
So you like the matchup of the curveball of Charlie Morton. It's his third time facing Brandon Marsh. He struck him out the first two times, and I believe at least one of those was on that curveball. You like that matchup better than just getting the ground ball double play and being done. And when they finally went to Aaron Bummer, first pitch, ground ball to Whit Merrifield at second base, ground out, inning over. Like, the first pitch he made got the ground ball, ended the whole thing. So Atlanta gave this one away almost as much as Philly won this. Obviously, now you're in a situation of if Atlanta wants a chance of being able to capitalize on a Philly stumble, they're gonna have to go and win the next three to be positioned if Philly does not play as well as they can down the stretch to be able to go on a hot streak and take the division. But at this point, it's uphill battle. Obviously, matchups this weekend for this series are going to be fantastic. Tonight, you've got Ronaldo Lopez versus Ranger Suarez. You have a Max Fried Zach Wheeler matchup on Saturday. That'll be on Fox. It's a national broadcast. I'm sure the Fox executives are punching air. It's the same day as the first full day of college football. And then Sunday, you're going to have Spencer Schwellenbach versus Aaron Nola. Really interesting matchup there. And I'm glad that Spencer Schwellenbach will get the national platform of Sunday Night Baseball to kind of show what he can do. But moving on from that matchup, we saw two other really interesting games yesterday. The Royals and the Astros. Astros win 6-3. Josh Hader gets his 29th save. But there's some stuff that happened here in, I believe it was the eighth inning, that's really impactful. Lucas Ursig, who ended up taking the loss in this one. He was, he's the reliever that they got from the Oakland A's. Three runs on two hits with a walk in a third of an inning. He leaves the game the same play that Vinny Pasquantino leaves the game. Both of them had hand injuries. Ursig got it. It was a ground ball in the infield. He barehanded it, bobbled it a bit when he threw to Pasquantino. It was offline. When Vinny P went to catch it, he collided with Yanye Diaz, the catcher for the Astros, running to first. Both left with hand injuries. Both are getting MRIs and imaging. No, not sure exactly the outcome of that or what's going to happen. They haven't announced as of time of recording this morning. But this is something where you saw, I mean, you have things in the bullpen if you're the Royals that you can feel okay about. Chris Bubik, one scoreless inning yesterday, two strikeouts, no hits, no walks. Only his fourth hold of the year, though. You really, like, you went at the deadline and prioritized, we have to get better in the bullpen, and Ursig was a big part of that. So if you don't have him, that hurts down the stretch. But I would argue that not having Vinny P would be even worse down the stretch, simply because I believe he's the RBI leader on this team. He is, I would argue, your second best hitter behind Bobby Witt. And not having him, correction, I guess Salvador Perez can play some more first base, and he's probably your second best hitter right now. He's batting almost 280 with an 8-something OPS. It's a little nuts. But not having Vinny P, I think, significantly lowers the danger of this, the threat of this lineup. And so obviously kind of waiting with bated breath to see what happens here. I was one of the many people who said, I think Kansas City is going to win the Central, right? They won, I think it was 3 out of 4 against Cleveland. They were a game back going into last night's action. And I liked them from a pitching perspective, from an offense perspective, from an explosiveness perspective with Bobby Witt to do more than I thought Cleveland could do down the stretch. But if you take Vinny P out of that, you take Lucas Ursig out of that, I really start to question what you're going to be able to do and what's going to happen there. So definitely something to be a little bit concerned about. And then the other significant matchup, Orioles and Dodgers. Again, two playoff teams, Orioles fighting for first place, Dodgers trying to hold on to first place. Dodgers win this 6-3. And the story here, I think, comes back to pitching. So Bobby Miller for the Dodgers, 5 innings, 3 runs on 2 hits, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. Not great, but better than the 7.25 ERA he was putting up. He were able to win. Now, whether this is replicable or not in the postseason, I don't know. But with all of the arms you have in the back end now, with an Evan Phillips, with Trinan, with Daniel Hudson, you went out, you've reinforced this pin enough where if you can make it through 5 and the Dodgers are still in the game, this pin has what it takes to shut teams down and keep and give you a chance to win. In this case, the Dodgers had scored all their runs in that 5th inning. They did score it in. You know, LA had a 5-3 lead. They added one on in the 8th. They easily won 6-3. No need to even do the bottom half of the 9th. The flip side, though, is Baltimore's pitching. We've talked about Grayson Rodriguez being out. We've talked about Zach Eflin's on the IL. Rodgers got sent down to AAA, which was surprising. Obviously, they were hoping he would stick in the rotation and potentially be in line for a playoff start. And instead, he went to AAA after they got him at the trade deadline. But Cade Povich, 3 1/3 innings, 5 runs on 10 hits, one walk to three strikeouts. And it's not like he got victimized with a long ball. And it's not really like he even got victimized by the big boppers. Oh, Shohei Ohtani was 0 for 5 in this game. Ohtani didn't have a hit. His brought his batting average down to only 292. Now, Mookie Betts went 2 for 4 with a run scored in RBI. But something where he didn't give up a homer. He just was consistently giving up hard contact. He gave up 3 doubles. Kike Hernandez, Gavin Lux, Austin Barnes. Not the guys that you're typically worried about beating you. You know, in this case, it was your 8 hitter and your 9 hitter. And then obviously Hernandez. But just a situation where there's genuine questions about, do you have enough pitching behind Corbin Burnes to actually do anything when you get in the postseason? I just realized, I think I said Kike Hernandez. That was Teoscar Hernandez, I believe, had the double, not Kike. When there's two Hernandezes in the... No, it was Kike. When there's two Hernandezes in the box score, it's a little tough sometimes. I couldn't remember which one it was when I watched this game. I turned this game on after the... I turned this game on and I just missed it there when it actually happened. But I'm still just concerned about this Baltimore offense. I'm sorry, this Baltimore pitching staff. And I don't quite know what they're going to be able to do down the stretch. A team that is not in it down the stretch, but is doing some interesting things and I think could be on the upswing, and I want to have the conversation, is the Los Angeles Angels. Zach Neto goes 20-20. He is the first Angels infielder in franchise history to have a 2020 season, which honestly feels a little bit unbelievable. It's kind of wild that they've never had a 2020 season. I was honestly shocked when I heard that. And so I can kind of picture a future where this could be a competitive roster, right? You have Zach Neto at short, Logan Ohapi behind the plate. Talk about Nolan Schonwell at first, getting Christian Moore. He looks, again, in the minors, he looks like he's going to be able to be an impact big leaguer eventually. If you're able to get him up, you're in a situation where you could have a pretty decent infield. I think Luis Reynifo is probably your new third baseman, which is a terrible indictment on Anthony Rendon, but what can you do? And then if you can get Mike Trout back healthy, and again, I still think you need to move Mike Trout to a corner. Put him in right field versus center just to ease the wear and tear on his legs. The man's in his 30s. He's coming off of multiple meniscus tears here. Move him to right field. It's significantly less running than when you're in center field. But I think my question here, is this enough to be competitive when we still have questions about your pitching? And the Angels have some interesting pitching prospects. They're calling up multiple of them this weekend. Caden Dana is supposed to be, I believe, starting on Sunday. And then Sam Aldagiri, he was acquired from the Phillies at the trade deadline. He is a lefty. He will start today. So you got Caden Dana on Sunday. You've got Aldagiri today, who, fun fact, when he throws his first pitch, he will be the first pitcher born and raised in Italy to play in the major leagues. So I'm sure they're thrilled about the concept of having him there for the WBC in a couple years. But I still have questions about the ability to find enough pitching. They had that all pitching draft. It did not work out. They've gotten a couple of major leaguers out of it. They've not gotten any impactful major leaguers out of it. And I think that's kind of the big takeaway. So I have questions about their ability to have impact from their pitching, but they do have guys to like. Ben Joyce, I was down on the selection as early as they took him. I was down on that when they called him up. I thought he wasn't ready. There was things he hadn't done yet, like throw on back-to-back days, which feels kind of essential for a reliever in Major League Baseball. He's worked on a lot of that stuff. He's added a power sinker. He's added a sinker. He's gotten the control better. He's throwing on back-to-back days. He's become a legitimate bullpen piece. So you feel like there's the beginnings of a core there. I just don't know if there's enough. Let me know what you think. If you're on YouTube, leave me a comment down below. Let me know what you think about the Los Angeles Angels. Do they have enough to get Mike Trout back into the playoffs before his career ends? Because at this point, I'm honestly not sure, but I want to hear from you. Talking about prospects and things like that, let's get to the quick pitch. Minor league update, Rhett Lauder, first round pick of the Cincinnati Reds in last year's draft out of Wake Forest. He is being called up, will make his MLB debut today. And I think one of the big things here is just how quickly some of the top of that draft made MLB. Paul Skenes has been up most of the year. Dylan Cruz is already up. Now you're seeing Rhett Lauder. So many guys coming up already. I can't remember the top of a draft giving you this many major leaguers this quickly. That's obviously not the exhaustive list. Knowing Sean was up last year, but that's the Angels, right? It blows my mind that is the legacy of that draft already, is having so many, what look to be very good. Like Paul Skenes looks to be amazing. I mean, and he's up already. He wasn't up a full season and he's first or second rookie of the year, depending on who you ask, right? Depending on how you feel about Jackson Merrill. Another interesting thing, this is courtesy of the Atlanta Braves official historian. He sent this out the other day. Right now, Chris Sale, it has a 2-win lead over, I believe it's Dylan Cease, Aaron Nola, and Zach Wheeler in wins. Sale has 15. I'm sorry, 3 up. They all have 12 wins. If Chris Sale holds on to lead the National League in wins, it'll be the third consecutive year that a Braves pitcher has led the National League in wins. And it's only the third time in NL history that that's happened. The first time was the Brooklyn Super Boss, 1899 through 1901. And that is, this is the predecessor of the Los Angeles Dodgers, right? They eventually became the Brooklyn Dodgers. They had a bunch of weird names, the Brooklyn Bridegrooms and things like that, before they eventually became the Dodgers and then moved to Los Angeles in the 50s. But the other time that it happened was actually 4 years and not 3, and it was also the Atlanta Braves, 95 through 98. 95 was Greg Maddux. He had 19 wins. 96 was John Smoltz. He had 24 wins. 97, not Tom Glavine. Danny Neagle had 20 wins on that 97 Braves roster. He did not, from an ERA perspective, necessarily outproduce everybody. He had a 2.97. Maddux had a 2.20. But Neagle had 20 wins. Maddux had 19. Smoltz had 15 and a 3.02 ERA. Glavine had 14 and a 2.96. And then Glavine got his opportunity finally in 98. He had 20 wins. He led the team in 98. So I just find it interesting that Atlanta could have it with 3 different guys in 3 years. Kyle Wright's not even a member of the team. He had shoulder issues all through 23, was traded after the year to the Royals, and is out all of this year while rehabbing his shoulder issues. And then in 23, it was Spencer Strider. Spencer Strider had it, and obviously he's out now doing Tommy John and doing the rehab on his elbow. Couple interesting little fun things here. Barry Larkin, franchise great for the Cincinnati Reds, said on the broadcast yesterday, I was tuning in to watch an Eddie LaCruz at bat, because if you have a chance, watch an Eddie LaCruz at bat. And he said that before his career is over, Eddie De La Cruz's number will be retired in Cincinnati. Now, obviously, very early in his career to make that proclamation, right? He has, as of right now, he has 230 games in Major League Baseball. This year, he's batting .262. He's brought that up almost 30 points from last year. It's an .826 OPS, 22 homers. He leads baseball with 61 strikeouts. 61 stolen bases. He leads the National League with 12 caught stealings. And he leads baseball with 171 strikeouts. What's really interesting is there's some other guys who have worn 44 in Cincinnati who could probably make an argument that they should have their numbers retired. Eric David, Adam Dunn. But I'm really curious about this. We're going to put a poll up on the First Pitch Twitter account. I want to hear from you if you think that Ellie De La Cruz will get his number retired or not. Final thing, let's preview some of the weekend series real quick. I do think that this is a great weekend for baseball, as Christian said the other day. Obviously, you do have some issues here with overlapping with football, but Kansas City at Houston, that series continues. Seth Lugo versus Framber Valdez tonight. That's going to be a really interesting one. Dodgers and Diamondbacks. The Dodgers are in Arizona for this series. I am super excited to watch Clayton Kershaw versus Zach Gallen. I want to see what Kershaw still has in the tank against one of the hotter teams, despite the injuries. So we'll see what happens there. Outside of that, there's really interesting. There's a doubleheader today, Milwaukee and Cincinnati. They're in Great American Ballpark. Again, you'll get to see Rhett Lauder. He pitches game two as it's 6:40 Eastern, but game one's at 12:40. Set your fantasy lineups early. That is the only day game today, so that should be watching for just about everybody. And then some interesting games where one team, not the other, is a playoff contender. The Padres at the Rays. Martin Perez versus Taj Bradley. Curious to see how Taj Bradley can handle that lineup of San Diego. Really curious there. Cardinals at the Yankees. Eric Fetty. The Cardinals are officially no longer going for it. They put Tommy Pham on waivers. He should clear waivers if he's not claimed on, I believe it's on Saturday, so that he can be signed by Sunday to be postseason eligible. So that is Fetty versus Stroman. Stroman's one of those guys we talked about, I think it was on yesterday's show, about how the Yankees need to know what pitchers they have that can start postseason matchups, because we don't think Luis Gill can do it. Carlos Rodon does not look like he's going to be reliable in the postseason. You might start him. I don't think it'll go well. His career ERA with the Yankees, reminder, is a 5. And so Stroman, who they skipped a couple weeks ago from a start for fatigue, if he can do well against the Cardinals, you have to feel a little bit better. You need him to do well so that you have some more confidence who can go behind Gerrit Cole, especially because we don't know for a fact if the Yankees are going to win the division or not. Yankees and Baltimore are still kind of neck and neck. It's a small lead, and that can change. And so you may have to go to the wild card. And if you do have a wild card matchup, that means you really can't get by with just three pitchers, because you're going to have to burn somebody in that wild card matchup. You're going to need probably 4 starters if you're a wild card team. So the Yankees need a good start out of Stroman there. Either way, it's going to be a great game. A great weekend of baseball. The Apple TV game is Seattle at the Angels. George Kirby, Sam Aldagiri making his debut. Like we said, that's at 9:38 on Apple TV Plus again. But either way, fantastic weekend of baseball. Enjoy that. Monday's a holiday. We will have a show though on Monday, so come back for that. And until then, this has been First Pitch.